Welcome to the Live Your Life podcast, episode number 8. Today, my conversation is with Dr. Jennifer Blasey. Dr. Blasey is a naturopathic physician in Washington State. She helps her patients achieve wellness by treating them from a whole person perspective. And one of the tools that she uses to support her patients is genetic testing. With genetic testing, you can receive your specific individualized genetic constitution and understand exactly who you are and what you need to do to achieve optimal health. Everything expressed in the Live Your Life podcast is either my opinion or the opinion of my guest, and this is not a replacement for healthcare services. If you find yourself in need of therapy or other healthcare services, please seek out resources for that. I'm Jasmine Savari, and welcome to the Live Your Life podcast. As a coach with a master's degree in psychology, I know that so many of us are missing the authentic experience of truly living our lives. I want to inspire you with conversations that expand your consciousness and empower you to create the best life possible. Let's start living now, because now is all we have. Hi, Dr. Blasey, and welcome to the Live Your Life podcast.
Hi, Jasmine. Thanks for having me today.
Yes. So we have lots of good stuff to talk about. So let's start off by saying that Dr. Blasey is a naturopathic physician, and this podcast is for informational purposes only, and it is not a replacement for healthcare services. If you need some sort of medical support, please contact your physician, or if you're in Washington State, you can reach out to Dr. Blasey. So let's start off by talking about who you are and what you do.
Thanks, Jasmine. So my name is Jen Blasey, and I'm a naturopathic physician in the state of Washington. I've been in practice about 10 years at this point. I went to Bastyr University, and the reason I became a naturopathic physician was that as a kid growing up, I watched my parents and much of that generation take a lot of medications, and then as a result have a lot of side effects. So that was one of the big pieces that motivated me, was just personal experience and seeing what happens when health is just equated to taking another medication. So I was doing research at the University of Washington as an undergrad. I was in the biochemistry department. I worked on genetics in fruit flies, of all things. And after that lab, I went into an AML lab at Fred Hutch, using that same genetic pathway to look at how that pathway influenced stem cell development in the progress of acute myeloid leukemia. And while I was doing that, being a research assistant at Fred Hutch, I saw a naturopath for the first time. And I've had chronic migraines my whole life, and I've never really been able to get in control of them. But by seeing a naturopath in Seattle, I began to kind of understand the migraines a little better and get a little traction with them. And so I was introduced to a different way of approaching health and healthcare. So instead of pursuing a pre-med path, which is kind of what I had been on, I began to go to Bastyr University, where naturopathic physicians are trained. So that's how I got to doing what I do.
So are you open to sharing a little bit about what you were doing to treat your migraines and what changed for you?
So initially, what changed for me was just awareness around diet, which is really common for naturopathic physicians to pay attention to. There were some underlying things that the naturopathic physician helped me treat, metabolic issues. Stress management is another big piece of what naturopathic physicians do. And really, you know, taking my health into account from a whole person perspective. So I began to see improvement with the frequency and the intensity and all those kind of good things. Eventually, I became involved in understanding some of my genetic constitution, which then helped me understand how I could kind of shortchange some of the problematic pathways that were leading down to my migraines. Migraines are something that my mom always had, my grandma always had, so they're constitutionally in my family, unfortunately. But with a little bit better understanding of my own personal genetic constitution, I was able to really, for the first time, make a big shift in the intensity and frequency of those migraines without it being all just heavy-handed management of diet and stress and all those kind of things. So I went from using a more traditional naturopathic approach to then building in some of the more specific modern information that we now have around nutrigenomics is what we like to call it. So how nutrition affects your genetic constitution. Another thing to call that is understanding your epigenetic effectors and how you can use them to improve your quality of life and health.
Okay. All big important stuff. And so the intention of this is to dive into the genetic stuff, but I think it's helpful to start with more information about what is naturopathic medicine. What is it? Why do people do it? How is it different from traditional medicine? What is that? Can you give us some information about that?
Yeah. So naturopathic physicians, while everyone practices slightly different how they come at things, medicine is an art, and that is a true thing. So some naturopaths use certain modalities, while some naturopaths don't. One thing that people will often say to me is, so you're a homeopath. And naturopathic physicians in the state of Washington do a ton more than just homeopathy. Some people use homeopathy, some people don't. That's more of a modality as opposed to being...
What is homeopathy?
That is probably more detailed than you want right now, but it's just a common misunderstanding that people will come up with when they're trying to understand what a naturopathic physician is. So a naturopathic physician is a physician who is a primary care physician. So we do gyne exams, we do blood work for people. We can help manage specific health conditions, or we can really help people do preventative healthcare work. It just depends. I'm also a licensed acupuncturist, so I do a lot of pain management as well. But naturopathic physicians are really trying to look at the whole person, like I described with my personal experience. So understanding that diet is working, digestion is working, stress management, all those kind of things with a large variety of tools, depending upon how that naturopath chooses to practice medicine. But all primary care physicians in Washington state can do those basic things that your general practitioner, or your family physician at home would do for you.
And how is it different from Western medicine?
Right. So because we are really trying to understand the person in more depth, we often spend more time in appointments with people. It's really hard in a 10-minute period of time to really have a sense of what's going on with someone. So naturopathic appointments tend to be longer. And like I said, we don't see the person with a stubbed toe and assume that that came from just one pathway. We try to, talk to the person and understand maybe why they stubbed their toe and why that's a problem to begin with, and then get at the root cause of that. So while Western medicine tends to try to solve health issues, naturopathic medicine or alternative medicine actually tries to begin to also create health for the person and look at what is it for that person can actually create a healthier pattern for them, healthier tissues, all that kind of thing. So we don't just treat disease. We try to actually help the person become stronger. And the genetic or the genomic nutritional information begins to help a person understand themselves and their constitution in a way that they can then become stronger.
Yeah, perfect. So that's a good segue into, so you were talking about the epigenetics. What is epigenetics? What does that mean?
Yeah. So genetics is a very complicated thing. But the way that I like to look at it is that we all have a range of health. So we're put on this planet, we're given our genetics, and then our life circumstances are kind of, you know, mixed into that. And this range is generally determined by what mom and dad contributed. But then that range of health can be affected by things such as epigenetics. So epigenetics is when the environment, so something like stress or diet, or even developmental stage that a person is at, that has an effect on which genes are being expressed at any given time. And so if someone is exercising, their genomic range or their health range tends to be more optimal than if they were not exercising. So if you think of health as a big number line, say, you know, one is the least healthy, you're at the bottom range of your health, versus someone who's at an eight, who eats fairly carefully and appropriately for their genetic constitution. You know, the person who's eight is going to have less of those concerning family health issues being expressed in their life at that moment than the person who's down near the bottom of the range. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
Great. So yeah, what we try to do with the genomic nutrition is to really understand that person in, you know, the best detail that we can. That's somewhat research limited based on what we understand at the current moment about SNPs. That's the genetic information that we look at to understand someone's health. And SNPs, there's tons of research out there over time associating particular SNP variants. That's really what we're, the information that we're gathering on each individual and beginning to understand. A really common one that a lot of people out there are familiar with in the alternative medicine world is MTHFR. And so that's a gene that has to do with B12 metabolism. So, you know, having that SNP, if you are nutritionally supporting it in a way that's appropriate based on your genetic nutrition, it begins to make that SNP less impactful in your life over time. And that's a whole separate side conversation about, you know, details with that. But does that make sense that we're trying to kind of support the individual nutritionally to move them higher up that health line so that they're functioning better?
Yeah. And I think it's really important what you're talking about. We can't do like a Google search for what's best for me to do to be healthy. So what you're saying is everybody's going to be different. Everybody needs to manage based on their genetic constitution, what they're at risk for.
Exactly.
Which is super important.
Yeah. For example, like I do really well with a high fat diet when I look at my genetics, whereas, you know, I have a number of patients who their metabolism actually does a lot better with a low fat diet. Or sodium intake, or even lectin exposure. We are very complex. And so sometimes, you know, just having those little understandings can make a really big difference in the balance of things.
So backing up a little bit, what you just said is so interesting, especially with the diet culture and all this stuff happening. How do you how do you measure my body does better with a high fat diet? What does that mean, or other people do better with a low fat diet?
Yeah, so there's a lot of research out there about, you know, incidence of cardiovascular disease in individuals with particular genetic backgrounds. And so over time, what we've looked at is that people with particular SNPs or combinations of SNPs, the combinations we call algorithms. So if they meet a certain algorithm combination of these SNPs, then their body is going to have more autoimmunity or not deal with gluten well, or, you know, like I said, with a high fat, low fat diet, they tend to tip in one way or another because of how their body breaks down and processes these macronutrients. So it's really important to have some sense of what your more ideal balance would be.
So I think what I hear you saying is you're more likely to get sick if you eat in a way that doesn't, your body doesn't support. You said autoimmunity. So you just don't feel healthy. You won't be healthy if you're not eating correctly.
Right. I think of biochemistry. So that's what my undergrad was when I was at UW. And so as I've moved through medical school and then, you know, dove deeper into this genomic nutritional stuff using the Opus 23 program by Peter Diadamo. That's where that comes from. I began to see biochemical pathways kind of as a river. And so if your body is processing things well, things flow and they don't get stuck in places. Because we all know what happens when a river gets dammed up or stuck. It's not necessarily a good thing, right? It'll get stuck at that place and then it'll flood around it and cause a lot of damage in that area. So health is very similar. You want those biochemical pathways to have all the cofactors and be able to move from step to step in a smooth way. And then that makes the individual's life better and not have a stuck place that's causing them problems. So for example, with that, with my migraines, kind of the last thing I came down to, I have a couple SNPs in a gene called MAOA that I think my percent functionality or estimated percent functionality on that is like below 25%. So one of the ways I was able to get around that was to understand what herbal support helped that enzyme work better so that I don't get stuck in that place. And so things like my neck pain went down, my headache frequency and intensity is so much less. I could have, you know, an occasional small glass of wine, which I never, not that I'm advocating wine, but, you know, it's nice at times when you're out and social, if you're a sensitive individual, to be able to have a little bit more flexibility and plasticity in your life, especially when you've spent most of your life really being careful about everything. So that's what I really love about helping people just clear some of those blockages, get everything flowing and balanced. Now, having said that, we don't know everything. There hasn't been research on every single biochemical pathway in the body. It's a very complex thing. But a lot of what we do know are kind of those big grab things that have been problematic health-wise for people and therefore have been researched quite a bit. So does that make sense?
Yeah, so I'm really curious about motivation. So I want to ask the question that I'm sure many of us are curious about. So when you talk about diet, optimal health, feeling good, things flowing, how does that connect with storage of body fat and eating? Because I think a lot of us eat based on what it will make our body look like. I don't think a lot of us pay attention to what it feels like. So I know I've had conversations with you about different ways of eating as I want to step into, you know, like a healthier body. And we're taught that that's about what it looks like a lot of the time. So how does this impact storage of fat, like overall, like health?
Mm-hmm. So I'm going to give you two answers to that. Okay. So from a just literal straightforward perspective, we can look at things like metabolism, right? So how you metabolize fat, how you balance sugars, how you deal with carbs. Some people, carbs are not their best friend. Some people can eat carbs and have no problem, right? So understanding where you fall in that mix and how your metabolism works is helpful. If it's flowing better and smoother, you're going to have less of a tendency to put on pounds. So actually, I'm going to give you three answers to that. Sorry.
Great.
You know, and it's not just diet with that. So there's a lot of information that we can glean even from exercise with that. I can tell you how strong your connective tissue is if you have more of a tendency to develop, you know, back pain because you've got particular SNPs in your connective tissue that is your padding between your joints. So for some people, high impact versus low impact exercise is more appropriate. So understanding that about yourself is really important. We even are able to get it down to muscle twitch fibers. So what your strength, whether strength is your best thing, speed or endurance, right? So that's kind of fun to understand how you're wired, you know, what type of activities hit your system the best and that you are physically most benefited from by participating in. And then I'm going to get to the third one.
So I'm going to jump in really quick. And so are you saying that this is part of the genetic testing so they can check and see what's most beneficial for you? Or is this just a different part of your practice?
So this program is really broad. It looks at the whole person. So yes, it all of that information, when we sequence your DNA, your information, we're able to see, you know, whatever the platform that you use. So there are a number of commercial ones out there right now, right? So we can take that raw data, stick it back in the database, and it will process whatever they sequenced for you. And that's a personal discussion between me and the patient as to which areas they're most interested in, because some platforms do one thing and some platforms do another. So I would just want to make sure that whichever platform they chose to use is best suited to what their questions and goals are. But in general, for most people, those are pretty basic things that come out and that we're able to share if that's something interesting. Sometimes we do a 20,000 foot view where we just churn through all of it. And then sometimes we do a more focused, concern specific review of their nutrigenomics. If, for example, I've had people who have a high family tendency towards colon cancer and they want to understand kind of what in their genetics is kind of hanging out there and what lifestyle mechanisms are going to be most helpful to trying to keep them as high on that constitutional health range as we can. There's never a golden buzzer where you're just scot-free. We can never guarantee that. But the goal is always keeping you, you know, as high up that health range as we possibly can, given what we know.
Great. So going back to your third answer.
And my third. And So in life, there are lots of things that we worry about, and there are lots of expectations that we have for ourselves amongst those anxieties and worries. And so one thing the program can be very helpful with is helping with some of those anxieties. And so sometimes finding some things that help us worry a little bit less, lets us relax and enjoy more of the benefits we get from exercise and focus on those things a little more than worrying about kind of, you know, what we look like as we come out the other side. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Anxiety is a booger in life. It gives us a lot of problems, as you know, Miss Jasmine.
Yes, as I know. And it's super important to look at. And I just think about how health is connected with so many mental health issues are connected with the physical issues that we see. And I'm sure that you see a lot of that in your practice.
Absolutely.
I want to jump into the mental health piece, but I want to stay really quick with this idea of motivation. So I know a lot of people talk about doing their genetic testing to see their ancestry, right? And so That's what I hear a lot of people doing. I'm curious, what is the motivation that you see for a lot of people getting this genetic testing done?
Yeah. So generally, you know, there are two different ways people come to me. Sometimes it's a patient that I've had for a while that we've tried some general things, kind of aiming in a direction, giving conventional knowledge and, using both naturopathic and Western approaches to a condition. And maybe it just things that normally would work for 90% of the folks out there just haven't worked for that person. And so this genomic understanding can sometimes help us find a way to get that person to their goal, even though the, you know, more conventionally accepted or even naturopathically conventionally accepted ways of approaching it aren't working for that person. So there's that. I've got, you know, patients, for example, like there are some sleep supports that I use that work really well for about, I want to say even 95% of my folks. But, you know, there's always that group of 5% that it gives them exactly the opposite effect, right? Mm-hmm. And so why is it doing that? Why is that pathway not flowing the way that we really want it to? So that's one way. And then I do get people who are either active in the genomic community, so interested in MTHFR out there. That's, like I said, that's a big buzzword. There's a lot of people who, both for cardiovascular and neurologic reasons, well, it's even more broad than that. That's a really broad area. They have already done a fair amount of research into how that pathway is affecting their life. And because of the depth of this particular program, we're able to go a little deeper on that than some of the other applications out there. So that'll often bring people in, or people will hear about the Opus 23 program and really want to be assessed by that, just because it is such a broad, amazing system.
Do a lot of people know? Because I didn't know a lot about this until I was introduced to your work and heard you speaking about it. Yeah. Do you find that many people know this is even an option for them?
People have seen a lot of the, like, there's a lot of weight loss, little quickie tests that people can do out there, that generally people will do and then be frustrated by because it doesn't give them, kind of what they were looking for. The Opus 23 program is actually out on the East Coast, so it's not as local here as it, has gotten to be out there. But I do, you know, I'm on a website listed for a number of these things. And so people will find me through that. And then because of a lot of the MTHFR stuff, people are very SNP aware. There's actually a local physician who does a lot of all this stuff. And he has a number of programs that people have started with, but then they want to go deeper. And so they'll kind of find me through that.
That makes sense. So segue to the mental health parts of it. I know that you had been doing a little bit of thinking about that before this podcast. So what can you say about that connection?
Yeah. So in general, the less anxiety that we have and the easier that it is for us to deal with stress and change. Not that any of us have any of that right now. But life just becomes easier. a lot of my folks experience their stress and emotions in their bodies. And this is one thing with pain management that kind of, it's really handy because people will often experience the things and they're somaticizing them. And, you know, there's nothing like relieving pain for people to show them the power of all of this way of approaching things. So I've found that even though, you know, I do both things in my practice, a lot of pain management, which also causes a lot of anxiety and worry for people, you know, being able to help them clear those pathways so things are flowing better, there's less pain, there's less anxiety, they can really start to kind of work on some other things, which is just such a gift to have relief in those areas. So the program is pretty amazing in understanding people. It even goes as deep as looking at, you know, people whose nervous systems are more sensitive to stress. They don't metabolize cortisol and stress hormone as quickly, so of course they have more stress. But actually seeing that written down and somebody saying, yes, there's a reason that you know, your friends always think you're the stressed out one. You know, you are chemically sensitive. You know, your detox pathways aren't working as well. Having that spelled out and being understood that they're just wired that way. And, you know, in the past, there haven't been ways for them to begin to get in and deal with some of those things in a productive way. They've just had to manage it. It's just always been this thing about themselves. So it's a real honor to share that time with someone and have them understand that this is how they're wired. You know, I always joke I'm a little bit of a canary. Like, if somebody's going to pick up on something coming through because of my detox pathways and because of, you know, it's going to be me. And that's really true. It's nice to, like I said this before, it's nice to have a little wiggle room to have that not be constantly at the forefront. So it just can be a real ease for people.
Sounds like it's incredibly empowering. Everything we're talking about, I think we all look for, not we all, but often we look for some authority figure to tell us what to do. How do we take care of ourselves? How do I lower my stress? How do I, you know, lose weight? How do I build muscle? How do I do all these things? And what I believe and what I hear you supporting is just that you can't find that outside of yourself. It's really about looking at who you are and what you're bringing to the table, and then that will give you accurate information. And I would imagine a lot of people spend a lot of time. I know I see it in my work too. When somebody has some sort of, you know, anxiety or something that's happening, they'll look for tools to manage that instead of diving in to see, like, what is your programming? Like, what has impacted you your whole life to create this person that is you? And that's such an empowering experience and a very healing experience for people to connect with themselves. But we're not taught to do that. So I love that you're inviting people to, like, literally the, like, blueprint of what makes them up, which is so much more valuable.
Yeah. And the cool thing is, like, you know, some people think of genetics as some, like, guaranteed, like, okay, this is what's going to happen to you. But that's not how our biology and our genetics work. We can actually interact with our genetic programs and either have them expressing kind of in an optimal range. We can't change what that individual's constitutional range is, right? But we can get them as high up on their constitutional range of health as we understand at this point, right? That's our only limitation with things. There are some things that we don't have the research behind to, you know, put our foot down about. But, you know, that really is the limitation at this point, because if we do have the research, then there's just quite a bit of information out there. It even goes so far as responses to particular medications. Some people, based on their genetics, you know, respond more successfully to, you know, different medications. So one of the things that comes out of the report is a medication list that, you know, some people have real unfortunate reactions to particular medications. And so that's a really helpful thing for people to know instead of going down a rabbit hole at some point, you know, along with the dietary information and then the environmental effectors. So what are things that, you know, kind of negatively interact with your constitution? It's still up to you to, in your life, you know, pay attention to those things and act on them. So it still takes effort. But the knowledge really goes a long way. So
I want to dive into this question of like the safety of having your genetics out there in the world. What can you say about that?
Absolutely. So that is a real thing. It's even more of a real thing with the threat to a lot of the ACA legislation. So I generally encourage folks to, if they're uncomfortable with that, to use a name that they're comfortable submitting. The information will come back to them, but the danger can be having it tied to your name and date of birth. If insurance were able to, you know, search that up at some point, that would be potentially a problem down the road. And then there have been incidences. So one of the big companies out there, I want to say it's almost 3 years ago, sold people's data, not with their names attached and all that kind of thing, but, you know, it's fairly private information for people. So those are really the two big issues for folks. So, you know, the first one is a way to control who's attaching your genomic information to your name and date of birth. And then the second one is, you know, is somebody selling my data? And that's something I can talk about with them directly in office so that they understand which platforms, you know, there's more risk of, you know, their data being sold and all that kind of thing. Some people are just, because it's not with the data selling, because it's not directly attached to your identifying information, some people are just comfortable with doing that anyway, and then some people are just not. So you have to reach a place of comfort with that. And so we have some strategies for dealing with that.
Yeah, that's important. So how have you seen people's health impacted? Like what stories have you experienced or witnessed with this work?
Yeah, so, you know, it's just empowering information. So I've had patients who've had clotting disorders who were going through, you know, some major medical procedures. One gal was going through chemotherapy and was having some shortness of breath and was really pushing them for a lung scan because we knew that she had a coagulation disorder. And because she had that information, she continued to push. And it did turn out that she had a pulmonary embolism that was not detected by them previously. And so, I mean, to that point, that's pretty extreme, right? I mean, it saved her life. Mm-hmm. Not the program, but her being empowered and advocating for herself, correct?
Yeah.
So, you know, we see everything from something extreme like that to, you know, just a better understanding of themselves, their health. So making better choices around exercise that then allows them to, you know, have less injuries down the road, or enables them to manage their metabolism better. Digestive health is another big area that can be positively impacted for people. And when your digestion or inflammation are balanced and working well, life is just better. So we're able to do those things. With screening exams also, sometimes folks just really don't like to stay on top of their screening exams, which of course I always encourage them to stay on top of all of them. But in, you know, some patients who just won't always cooperate, I can at least with, you know, this information be like, look, there's not only do you have a family history of this, but this is showing up in your genetics, and this is something that you need to be very mindful of. You know, of course, anything that's serious, we would refer them out to a genetic counselor to have, you know, a more serious conversation about. There are some things like the BRCA genes and just some different neurological stuff that, you know, if that is in their constitution, they need to have a more focused, specific conversation around that with a genetic counselor. But in general, the, you know, less serious conditions, we're just able to make a plan, a nutritional plan, an exercise management plan, a understanding of what medications, you know, will work well for them if they have high blood pressure, or even pain med management is reflected in the system. So you just, you have a blueprint of how you can begin to make choices. You know, my father just actually went through a big medical event, and it's overwhelming when it's happening. And, you know, it's really hard to make decisions quickly and in the moment. And so, you know, having that additional knowledge about how your system responds is super helpful. So,
yeah. I'm really curious about what the exercise piece of it, which exercises prevent injury. Mm-hmm. Can you say more about that?
Yeah. So that's just based on some people's connective tissue. So a lot of lower back injuries are kind of at that L4, L5 sacral area. And so if your connective tissue isn't as strong and you're doing a lot of high impact exercise, for those folks, they just have more of a tendency to develop issues in that area. In addition, there are folks that somaticize a lot of stuff. I mentioned this earlier. So, you know, there's the whole fibromyalgia picture. So understanding your pain tolerance and your tendency to get injured, that can be very helpful information as you're making choices. And then all the muscle twitch fiber information, you know, if you're someone who's got weak connective tissue and your area of genetic strength is not, say, endurance or, say, strength, then you wouldn't want to engage in activities that really challenge those areas. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. So I, going back to the fibromyalgia and the pain tolerance piece of it, can you say more about that?
Yeah. And so that is a big, complicated world, because a lot of that has to do with, serotonin metabolism and, cortisol levels, the tendency to hold things, in your muscles, as well as a lot of dystonias. Those are all, there's even stiff man syndrome, right? Like people's bodies just respond to things in different ways. And so understanding that constitutional blueprint for yourself helps you either supplement with things like extra magnesium. With fibromyalgia folks, you know, that extra magnesium is super important because it helps with a lot of the painful areas, or connective tissue support for the folks who tend to have less robust connective tissue buffering. We can, you know, put a plan in place if they are going to do regular exercise, then that puts a lot of impact on their joints. We can kind of buffer for that. So you can either make a guess and take 2 tablespoons of fish oil a day, trying to get inflammation down and trying to keep those joints lubricated, right? Or you can actually understand, you know, some of why you're having that that joint pain and those issues. So
what do you see the biggest issue with people guessing? Like you said, just taking 2 tablespoons of fish oil. I think a lot of us just do things. What do you see the risk with that?
Well, I mean, you know, there, that's kind of, medicine has figured out which things tend to be fairly safe in the largest group of folks. You know, when you look at the percentage of genes where there's variety from person to person, and actually this is kind of a nice thing to end on. I was looking at this last night and thinking about all that's going on in the world. There's really only 9% variability of your genome from person to person that can really occur. Like the rest of it, we are all the same, you know, because our bodies have to function. And so we need some pretty robust stability in the majority of the genome. So, you know, from me to you, Jasmine, you know, our variation is only 9%, but that 9% matters quite a bit. It really, you know, gives us all some different outcomes. So for the most part, most standard remedies that are out there are fine. But take, for example, you know, baby aspirin. A lot of people like to take a baby aspirin thinking that it's preventative, you know, for heart health, which is fine in the majority of folks. But if you look at someone who has salicylate sensitive asthma, or just, you know, someone who has a really sensitive gut, you know, for them, even though that's a pretty standard, pretty safe thing, for them, that's going to be problematic, right? So it's really important to spend some time with someone who looks at you as a whole person. And, you know, even for us, with as much time as we spend with people, there's so much to look at and consider for folks. I have a couple patients who have really complicated food allergies, and I have to sit down and like stare at what their food allergies are before they come in, because I need my brain to then filter anything that I'm going to recommend for them through those things. And, you know, usually these patients are really savvy about this because they have to navigate this every day in their lives. And, you know, so generally I will, after I've made a recommendation, we'll sit down together and put our heads through it and just make sure we haven't missed something. Because, you know, some of these things are just really important, but the patient being involved and, you know, taking action on it too is also really important. So the more educated that people can be about themselves and what they need, it just plays into better outcomes for people. So
I do a lot of work with the body as well. And you're talking a lot about the somaticizing, and I think so many people are, my opinion is that many people are dissociated. They're not present in their lives or their bodies. Yep. And a way that issues manifest themselves is physically. And so I'd be curious to hear, how often do you see people who have had issues for a long time that they've just been able to ignore because they're not that bad? What would you say to those kinds of people?
Yeah, I mean, it's pervasive. I mean, there's a lot we just have to, you know, suck up and keep going in life, regardless of what the stress is or the requirement that we're, you know, extracting from ourselves at the time. And so people have a lot of pain. And oftentimes, once we treat one thing, suddenly they realize that, oh, this other thing has really been bothering me for a long, you know, there are layers to these things. So with my acupuncture body work that I do with people, quite often, you know, we start with something glaringly obvious, like low back pain, or, you know, plantar fasciitis at night is killing them. And it's not so often that there's something wrong with that foot, or specifically, you know, structurally damaged in their back. It's often a balance of stress and sleep and things that they're taking that are, they're either trying to push themselves harder with or relax themselves with, that are, you know, then extracting another toll from them. And so the only way to really help them get to that and to understand that is to just sit with them and talk through it. And because we're required to so be in our heads so much of the time and not honor what our body needs, it's huge in our society. I always, both of my parents were teachers, my teachers that I see now, they survive through the school year. They just absorb it all. And then they get to summer and they come in and we do this really intensive deconstructive work over the summer, which is generally a 2-month period of time. And so by the end of the summer, they're feeling like human beings again. And, their bodies, they're being kinder to their bodies. Their bodies are being kinder back to them. And then they just kind of brace themselves because they know they are going back into an environment where they don't have time necessarily to go to the bathroom between classes. They don't have time to drink water unless they've really trained themselves to have some magic system to, get it in there. And they're dealing with the emotions of 25 to 30 kids in a class at a time. Like, it's just a lot. And so, sometimes helping people just understand and see that is enough. And sometimes it's too much for their systems, depending on, what their constitutions can take, how sensitive their nervous systems are, what their pain, all that stuff. So, the goal is to find something that works better for them. And that looks different for everybody. But pain and anxiety are not a place to live your whole life in. That is for absolute sure.
That is absolutely true. So if you could give to end just like a generic prescription for everybody to be healthy, like what would that be? What do you suggest that people do if maybe they haven't been very conscious or haven't really looked at their health? What would you present to them as like a simple roadmap to start?
Yeah. So I would say two things. So sleep is incredibly restorative and important. And if you're not sleeping, then all bets are off with everything. So if you're having trouble, go see your physician or acupuncturist or counselor, whoever, is going to help you get to a better sleeping place. The one thing that I find that's really helpful for people to really engage their parasympathetic nervous system, which is your rest and digest and repair nervous system. There are things like meditation, when you get a massage or you get some kind of treatment that allows you to get out of your head and into your body. Those things are all very helpful. But meditation, first thing in the morning, just setting the stage, saying that you're going to take those 5 to 10 minutes for yourself every day, no matter what, like you are exerting control over your environment. That's super helpful for people. And that can help, just that simple thing, like doing that regularly can make a big difference in your sleep, which then cascades down to your pain. So those are good, easy at home things to begin to bring into routine.
So simple question about sleep. We hear 8 hours of sleep. Does that differ depending on your genetic makeup, or is it pretty consistent for everybody needs the same amount of sleep?
It totally can vary depending on your genetics. Absolutely. There's a gene called clock, which I always think is funny.
That is funny.
That can be, there are a number of them. That's not the only one. That's just my favorite one because it's named clock. There are some different things that we can look at to try to, help maximize someone's processes. Because, there's another great common remedy example. Melatonin doesn't work for everybody. And there are a whole lot of complicated reasons for that. But knowing if you're one of those people is helpful. Even, vitamin D usage is really dependent upon a number of SNPs. So us in the Pacific Northwest, understanding how your vitamin D pathways work is super helpful. So,
Yeah, that's so interesting. So you said, did you say two things? You said one was sleep. Was number two meditation, or was there a second thing for health?
Yeah, those were the two general recommendations that, you know, everybody needs to be getting good quality sleep. And if you're not, figure out why. And then one way to kind of begin some stress management that can positively feed into the sleep management is to meditate for 5 to 10 minutes in the morning. There are a lot of apps on smartphones. You can find one that appeals to you and works for you. So, or CDs, or I'm sure there's a ton of resources out there. So you just find something that you like and start your day by taking care of yourself for 5 to 10 minutes every day. Everyone can commit that in their morning.
I think this reflects the mindset of naturopathic medicine, where I ask you two things for health and you didn't try to sell anything. You just invite people to really connect with themselves. And I think that's a powerful representation of how we find health. We don't need something outside of ourselves. It's often just an invitation to ourselves.
Yeah. It's a nice way of putting it. There's a whole realm of disease and misfunction out there. And, you know, Western medicine's got, you know, a grip on a lot of that. You know, the acute, if I injure myself in a way that I need an emergency room, that's where I need to be, right? So it's using the right tool at the right time. But if I'm really looking at creating health for myself and overall well-being, you know, we come back to some of these things that we have control over, like you said, inviting ourselves back to ourselves. So, yep.
So thank you so much, Dr. Blasey, for this. It's incredibly powerful and helpful information. I really enjoyed it. I hope everybody else enjoyed it. And so you're a physician in Washington State. So if anybody's looking for support, and right now, we didn't really talk about this. I don't know when people will listen to this podcast, but we're in the midst of COVID-19 and we're all in quarantine. So I know you're offering telehealth right now. Where can people find you if they're in Washington State and looking for your support?
Yeah. So I'm at Comprehensive Natural Medicine in Woodinville, Washington. Our website has the opportunity to schedule for telemedicine. We are currently doing some in-office, although it is pretty tight right now because of just keeping everything clean and aired out and all that sort of thing at the moment. I mean, we always do that, but right now it's at a new crazy level of intensity. So, yeah, so probably going to the website, and either there's a contact form on there if you have questions, or you can schedule an appointment, or reception is at 206-618-6549.
Perfect. So I'll include all this in the show notes. And I love the quote that you often end with about wellness and illness. Do you remember it? Are you open to ending with that?
Yeah, so I believe you're referring to the quote that says, if you don't make time for your own health, then you will be forced to make time for your illness. Yep.
Yes, that one. If you don't make time for your wellness, you will be forced to make time for your illness. So it's the most important thing I think that we all have. So thank you so much, Dr. Blasey. You're brilliant, and I really appreciate your time.
Oh, thank you, Jasmine. I really appreciate your time too.
Hey guys, it's Jasmine. Thanks so much for listening to the Live Your Life podcast, and don't forget to subscribe. You can find the show notes and information about life coaching at jasminesavari.com. You can also find me on Instagram at jasminesavari. I am a life coach and a licensed mental health counselor, but this podcast is not a replacement for healthcare services. If you are in crisis, please call 911 or the Crisis Clinic at 1-800-273-8255. Take care and don't forget to live your life.